joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Despite signs of a recovering economy, many business owners say they rely on part-time workers, especially those who work on call. But many who work unpredictable shifts say their lives are upended and paychecks reduced. With me here to talk about new trends in part-time work and proposed remedies, Carrie Gleason with the Fair Work Week Initiative and Aparna Mathur at the American Enterprise Institute. Joining me from a studio in Chicago, Susan Lambert at the University of Chicago. I look forward to your questions and comments. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And welcome to all of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, Dan.
Good morning.
Hello. And first to you, Susan Lambert. During the recession, we had a great many people who could only get part-time jobs. Now, even though the economy seems to be tilting upwards again, people are still only able to get part-time jobs when they'd rather be working full-time. Why is that? Why are the full-time jobs not there?
Well, these trends started well before the recent economic downturn. What we can see in labor market data is that they started as early as the 1970s and have grown since then. And so the recent economic downturn was, kind of put a fire underneath those trends that were already in process. And so what we see is that we've just had this slow climb in part-time employment with an enormous surge at the end. And so what we see is that historically, and when I mean historically, I mean between the 1970s and 1980s, about 15 to 16% of workers in our wage and salaried workforce worked fewer than 35 hours a week, which is what the Bureau of Labor Statistics defines as part-time. That's up to 20% now among hourly workers. It's 30%. And then, of course, in some industries, it's much higher, such as in retail overall, it's 37%. But these trends, I really want to emphasize that, were before the economic downturn and before the Affordable Care Act.
And Aparna Mathur, is it true that there are many employees who are happy with part-time work?
Well, if you look at surveys of workers who get part-time jobs, we can divide part-time workers into two types. There are the workers who are voluntarily employed part-time, who prefer to work part-time jobs because they either are attending school or they have medical reasons or they have childcare responsibilities. And there are workers who are involuntarily part-time employed. And in the current recession, we have seen an increase in the ratio of the involuntary part-time to the voluntary part-time. But I would argue that there are, within part-time workers, about 40% say that they prefer to have flexible work schedules because of all of these reasons. So we do see voluntary part-time work going up. We do see people preferring flexible work schedules within part-time workers as well.
But Carrie Gleason, I gather the trend of more part-time is also more on-call workers, and that makes a big difference.
It's true. Part-time workers, based on the research that Susan has done, I'll let her speak more to the actual trends, part-time workers are experiencing more volatile schedules. And so the nature of part-time work has changed. While many women, students want to work part-time, they're not able to access quality part-time work. In retail, some studies have shown that part-time workers earn a third less per hour than their full-time counterparts, in addition to not having access to opportunities to advance, benefits, and voice in their schedules.
So is it true that more and more employers wish to have part-time on-call workers than to have full-time workers who are going to make more money and for whom they need to pay special medical health coverage and the like?
It's true. Many employers are starting to move to large part-time workforces, having them receive last-minute hours, such as on-call shifts. And what's resulting is that there's a deficit in access to quality, stable employment.
Now, Susan, I gather the study that Carrie just referred to, you did a study of federal labor data, and you found that almost half of younger part-time workers have totally unpredictable schedules. Tell me about that.
Well, the data are from a very well-respected data set that the Bureau of Labor Statistics runs, the National Longitudinal Survey of Youth. And so these are young adults in the labor market between 26 and 32 years old. And among the part-time workers, so this would be a nationally representative sample, among hourly workers, about 47% say that they know their work schedule 1 week or less in advance. They report hour fluctuations. 83% of them saw hour fluctuations in the last month, and they varied on average by 87% compared to their usual hours. So we just saw these huge fluctuations in hours. And an important thing is only about 40% of them say that their employer sets their schedule and they have no input at all into the starting and ending times.
And, of course, I would think that reduces what they can count on in terms of money from week to week.
Absolutely. Especially for people paid by the hour, of course, because what you earn is a direct function of your wages and the number of hours that you work.
So, Carrie, give me sort of a hypothetical of a young person, say, working in retail, and what happens to him or her.
So, you know, I can tell the story of a worker who is employed at Walmart. Tiffany Bernoyd has been a worker whose story has been told often. And, you know, she's a mom. She was also a student. She had requested to Walmart to make a scheduling accommodation so that she could participate in school. And instead, she sought her hours cut. And that's why the Schedules That Work Act is so important, that when part-time workers ask for these flexible work arrangements, all too often, they're being punished for needing these really reasonable scheduling accommodations. And what's happening, you know, adding school combined with Tiffany's also a mother, when you're working part-time and on a schedule that changes all the time, it's hard to participate in formal childcare options.
So are there any rules in place governing part-time workers now?
There's very few policy protections that govern work hours. And so across the board, what we're finding is that, you know, the nature of work has changed, but our public policies are outdated. And that's what we're seeing across the board is a movement across the country, really, to say we need new protections around the hours that we work, whether it's, you know, cell phones that tether us to our job, or for hourly workers, they need to have some kind of stability and voice in their schedules.
But at the same time, Aparna, you have employers who may need to have more flexibility in whom they hire and for how long.
Absolutely, Diane. I mean, if you look at the reasons why employers go for these flexible or on-call workers or shift workers, a big reason is that they need the flexibility. We're in an economy which is experiencing a weak recovery. I mean, we are still seeing business investment is down, consumer spending on durables is down. Employers are still making decisions about how much they anticipate in terms of forecasting demand. So we need to have employees that they can hire on call who, if they experience peaks in demand, they can get more workers to come in. If they experience a reduction in demand, they can get fewer, of these on-call workers. So I would suggest that, these are economic conditions driving this demand for shift workers, for on-call workers.
But how would you respond to the concerns of the employees in the face of need for childcare and need for other needs for...
I would suggest, I assume that a lot of this bargaining happens voluntarily. I am sure there are cases where, the employers have gone against employees who have demanded these more flexible schedules, but I would argue that a lot of it does happen voluntarily. We see surveys of employees who say, they want more flexibility, they get that flexibility to meet childcare needs, to meet medical needs, and so a lot of these happen through voluntary bargaining, and we don't need to mandate and regulate these arrangements.
Susan Lambert.
Yeah, I study firms and workers in firms, and a lot of this is absolutely involuntary, especially in low-level hourly jobs. I think one of the things we have to realize is that there's a big difference in the quality of jobs at the top of the labor force and the bottom of the labor force, and variation in work hours will be instability for people at the bottom and not really flexibility.
All right, we'll take a short break here. That was Susan Lambert. She is at the University of Chicago. We're talking about conditions for part-time workers. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking about basically a changing economy where you've got a growth in part-time workers. As one of our guests, Susan Lambert at the University of Chicago, mentioned earlier, this is not a brand new phenomenon. It's been going on since the 70s. However, you heard two directly opposing statements, the first from Aparna Mathur, who is with the American Enterprise Institute, saying that much of this part-time work is done voluntarily. The hours imposed are agreed to voluntarily, whereas Susan Lambert said the opposite, that they are imposed Aparna, I want to give you a chance to respond.
Thanks, Dan. I'm going to cite a survey that was done by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that, you know, which provides the same data that Susan is using. And according to the BLS survey, they focus specifically on part-time workers, and they ask them, you know, why do you opt for flexible work schedules? And the reason they're able to opt for and get flexible work schedules, and this, you know, 40% said that we want to do it for, because we're in school, you know, we want to study, we have day job, day sort of schooling responsibilities. Another 30% said it's the nature of the job and we're ready to do it. And, you know, again, these are voluntary arrangements between the employer and the employee. And, you know, another 9 to 10% said it's childcare and family responsibilities. So you have survey data which suggests that these are voluntary arrangements that are being made between the employer and the employee.
But now, Carrie, what about the people who say they want to work full time and have only part time jobs?
So, you know, I also would like to respond to Aparna. The truth is that, you know, the data shows that students actually experience extreme fluctuations in their hours and don't have input into their schedule. So there's, when we're talking about flexibility, we can't use the term, you know, in the same way, you know, that employers want to have all the say in the schedules and aren't giving workers the opportunity to have a voice in the kind of accommodations that they need. And so that's one of the policy solutions that we're pushing for with the Schedules at Work Act, is that employers have to engage in an interactive process, that we all deserve a say in our schedules and some kind of voice to accommodate our school schedules or childcare needs.
So what you're saying is that you believe for a good many employees who are working part-time that it's not out of choice, but it's because they're told that they can only have part-time jobs, number one. And number two, within that part-time job, they have very little say about their own schedules.
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing is actual companies have policies that say if you reduce your availability, you cannot access full-time work. And this is written policy in many companies. And so, you know, in terms of the policy solutions, there's a lot out there that we can do. And we're not asking to, we're just looking to do a set of a simple baseline around the hours that we work to ensure that there's an even playing field for all businesses. There's a lot of employers that really have model workplace flexibility practices, but far too many firms are really looking to cut costs around work hours. And so if I may just highlight some of the policy solutions out there.
Good.
In the Federal Schedules at Work Act that was just introduced, there is the right to request and receive scheduling accommodations, which I already mentioned, as well as advance notification of schedules. Many employers already do provide 3 or 4 weeks advance notice. The federal bill is simply saying we should offer 2 weeks advance notice, as well as inform workers of the minimum amount that they could expect to work. I think when we think about budgeting, that's a reasonable need that working
families
have. All right,
stop right there. Aparna, how do you feel about that?
So I, you know, the bill does say that you have a right to request a flexible, predictable, and stable schedule. What I like about that is that it says that if the employer deems that there is a bona fide business reason for them to not allow that flexibility, then they can do that. And those business reasons include, you know, having demand conditions, depending upon the demand conditions that the employer faces. So if you're at a McDonald's shift and you anticipate a huge surge in demand on Sunday morning breakfast, then yes, you are allowed to say no, you know, we need you to be there. And again, so you can deny the request to, maybe you have another place that you want to be, but you could deny that request. So what I like about that part of the bill is that it does say that there are business reasons, cost reasons that employers can use
there
to deny those
exceptions.
Requests.
And yeah. Susan Lambert, how do you feel about those exceptions?
Well, the devil's always in the details.
Of course.
And those will probably be worked out in administrative rules in the government. And so this is something that many of us will be watching to see what are considered really bona fide business reasons. But absolutely, I think one of the key points here is that those of us who are supporting new standards around work hours, that we're also doing it not only to support workers, but also to strengthen businesses in our country.
Indeed. And Carrie, do you want to continue now with the other portions?
So, you know, there are seven states in this country that have reporting pay laws. When a worker arranges for childcare, pays for work, and reports to work, and businesses slack, that they can expect a minimum shift pay. And so the Schedules That Work Act looks to set a federal standard around reporting pay and then update it for today's workforce that says when workers are expected to be on call and be available with just an hour's notice, they should be able to receive some extra pay for being available to work in addition to when shifts are canceled. And so that's a,
you're saying if you get a telephone call saying, please be here in 2 hours, we've got a busload of people coming in, so we need your help. And then I, as an employee, arrive, and the buses have been canceled, and my employer says, never mind, I don't need you, go back home. What you're saying is that that employee should be reimbursed for how much?
For 4 hours of pay. That's the standard that exists in New York State and works successfully. Employers can predict their business needs. It's rare that the bus doesn't actually show up. And so it's just saying, you know, it's a pretty minimal pay for having a workforce that's available to work.
Aparna, how do you feel about that?
So the Schedules That Work Act, the technical compensation, it says that if you are entitled to come for 4 hours of a shift and you arrive and that doesn't happen, then you're entitled to a minimum of 4 hours. If you were entitled to less than 4 hours originally in the original scheduling, then you could get compensated for the actual hours that you should have been there. What I feel this does is that it imposes costs on employers when the very reason employers depend upon these workers is because they can change their schedule flexibly, that they can adjust to changing demand conditions. So if you're imposing costs on them, irrespective of whether they're actually getting people to come in and buy their products, I think you are going to see a situation where employers are going to rely less on these workers. And you may get the unintended consequence of employers saying, okay, well, we're not going to schedule these workers at all. Let's see if we have alternatives. Let's see if we can get a machine instead of this worker to come in and do this job. So
all
we could have unintended consequences.
And joining us now by phone from Connecticut is Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro. She's a Democrat representing Connecticut's 3rd District. Last month, she introduced new legislation that does aim to protect part-time and on-call workers. Congresswoman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very, very much. I'm pleased to join and pleased to join such a distinguished panel.
Thank you. Talk about the act that you introduced last month and what it would do.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I want to, I was listening to the panel discussion, and, while I concur that flexibility is important, the fact is what the Schedules That Work Act, which has been referenced, it's essentially there to protect hourly workers from scheduling abuse, and there's documentation around the issue of scheduling abuse, and we're looking at the fastest growing industries in our economy and the lowest paying industry. We're looking at retail, food service. These workers, and again documented, face erratic, and they are irregular, work schedules. And so, in essence, what we're trying to do is to protect all employees from retaliation, which has also been documented, for requesting a more flexible or a predictable or a stable schedule. And we're looking at legitimate reasons. Employees do have caregiving duties. They may be pursuing an education or a training course. They may have demands from a second job that require a schedule change. And what we do is create a process, but it also says that, that we want an employer to be responsive unless an employer has a bona fide business reason for denying it.
I wonder if you would talk about the kind of scheduling abuse that you've referenced.
Mm-hmm. Well, Congressman George Miller, Senator Tom Harkin, and Senator Warren, the four of us have introduced this legislation. We had a woman who was with us who spoke up, Mary Coleman, and we can give you chapter and verse. She arrives for her job at a Milwaukee Popeyes restaurant, told to go home without clocking in, even though she was scheduled to work, and then she was not paid for the day. Now, I don't know all the particulars of, what did Mary leave behind? What rearrangements in her schedule, her family schedule, that she had to change and rearrange to get there, take an hour to get there, and then told sorry, and then to not get paid? Where is the equity in something like that? Quite frankly, I'll just be very, low-wage workers in America are too often being jerked around. So what we want to do is to ensure that, the willingness to put in a hard day's work, get a fair day's pay, and the ability to care, to take care of, the circumstances that come up in your family life.
And
our view is that it benefits the employee, but also the employer, because you've got less turnover and less absenteeism.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Given the atmosphere, shall we put it, on Capitol Hill,
right,
Congresswoman DeLauro, how much support do you have for this bill, and how soon do you think you'd even be able to get debate on it?
Right. Look, currently in the House bill, we have 37 co-sponsors. We just introduced it, quite frankly, before we broke for the August district work period. We're adding people every day. We have 70 organizations who have endorsed the act. But your point is well taken. Frankly, getting any sort of pro-worker legislation through this Republican House of Representatives, is a very, very tall order, and certainly nothing is going to happen on this issue, and quite frankly, nothing will happen before the end of this session of the Congress. But what we've done is to we've laid the groundwork for the effort, and it will continue. I know our colleagues George Miller and Tom Harkin are going to retire, but Senator Warren and myself will carry the bill. If I could just make one point, because
certainly,
I think it's important in this context. A number of years ago, I proposed that we put calorie counts on menus. It was a number of years ago. I was regarded as a crazy aunt in the attic. It is now the law of the land. It's part of the Affordable Care Act, and we will have more transparency as that provision is being implemented. You had Pat Schroeder, Senator Dodd, introduced family and medical leave in 1985, 1986, and some of the same kinds of criticisms, if you were talked about at that time, that we were going to our economy was going to fail. We were putting an onerous burden on business. It finally became law in 1993.
Same with airbags.
And it's now, the 20 years, 100 million people, men and women, have used family and medical leave.
Sure.
And our business, our economy hasn't crashed. We're only trying to reflect what the current work environment is. And I will just say this from women's perspectives, in terms of minimum wage jobs, two out of three minimum wage workers are women. They they are in these retail jobs, they are in the restaurant field, and they're more likely single-headed households dealing with these issues and have to concern themselves about this kind of work. Yes, flexibility is important, but they're putting the pieces of their lives together and having consistency or two-week notice on, you know, what it might be. Sure, that could change, but as a norm, going in and being told you're going to be there for a length of time and then said no, well, 4 hours pay is standard, as it's been, you know, as our colleagues have said here on this panel. We're not asking for anything that is, quite frankly, outrageous, and it can be met. And most of all, not being retaliated against when you can't, when you request or you can't meet that request, so that you don't get the hours anymore and you're not able to sustain yourself economically.
So you said you had 33 supporters in
37
right, supporters right.
We have a ways to go.
To go, and the point that you are making is that these changes happen slowly, mm-hmm. and they happen when somebody gets in there and begins the dialogue and begins the push. Do you really think that someday this is going to be the law?
I do. I do believe that, the way I believed that, you know, the menu labeling was, and the family and medical leave was, and paycheck fairness will be. Men, women, same job, same pay. I believe all those efforts will be a law of the land.
All right. I want to thank you so much for joining us, Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, Democrat in Connecticut's 3rd District. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
And we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll open the phones. Stay with us.
National broadcast of the Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, dedicated to educating wonks to use knowledge to change the world. More at american.edu/wonk. By the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And by Vicky and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems, in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. This is NPR.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a reader's review of The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck, published 75 years ago. Steinbeck's story of a family's migration from Dust Bowl, Oklahoma, to California holds important lessons for today. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. As we talk about laws or the lack thereof affecting part-time workers, here's an email from Michael. He says, I'm from Canada and currently working in the USA. The lack of employment laws in the U.S. is astonishing. in Canada. Even as a part-time worker during my college years, I had protections mandated by law. These included mandatory vacations, specific rest periods between shifts, and other protections. The U.S. must join the rest of the industrialized world and enact stronger employment laws. Carrie Gleason, where does the U.S. stand in regard to the rest of the industrialized world here?
We're far behind. You know, in Europe, there are already many protections. There's the part-time work directive in the EU, and many of the policies are already in existence. There's right to request in the UK. There's equitable part-time work across the board. You know, what's interesting here is, you know, as we think about kind of where we are in public policy today, there was once a fight for the 40-hour work week. And I think that we could all say is that in the past 75 years, work has really changed. And so what's happening right now, there's a revival. You know, there's women who are working in the workplace more than ever. Low-wage industries are growing. And these women and low-wage workers are bringing back this fight for a fair work week. What we're saying is we just need a voice in how much and when we work. It's simple protections that many countries have already established. And so it's exciting to see this moment. I think while Congress has its own timeline, we're seeing cities and states across the country raise the minimum wage, and we're going to see a movement for a fair work week, I think, spread across the country. Because in terms of, especially for hourly workers, which are our growth workforce, you need not just high, you know, fair wages. You also need fair hours to add up to a decent paycheck at the end of the week.
Dan, what I worry about is overregulation. We have tons of research now looking at how a lot of countries in Europe had these huge, you know, restrictions on hiring and firing workers. You know, there were regulations about who you could fire, when you could fire, you know, what the cost was if you fired a worker, and all of that suggests that those kinds of restrictions on employers lead to a much less flexible workforce. And at the same time, employers are more reluctant to hire out of the pool of people, because they know that every hire they make, there's a significant cost to ever letting them go.
But what about part-time workers? Isn't the EU doing a better job? Aren't they ahead of us?
They have a lot more, they have a lot more flexible work arrangements, which is absolutely true. And I would say, you know, there's nothing wrong with part-time work. I think people who, if you regulate less, you will get more people into the labor force. And we're seeing the problem right now is we're seeing a labor market where people want full-time jobs and they're not getting those jobs. And I think if we regulate more, then we're going to see even fewer workers get full-time
jobs. What about that, Carrie?
I mean, in San Francisco right now, there's a proposal that says if an employer has more hours of work, all they have to do is simply offer their current workforce the opportunity to work full time. It's not mandating full time work. It's just saying, you know, Diane, would you like to work full time? No? Great. You're enjoying your part time job. OK, I'm going to go hire someone else. But it's just about creating a fair process to access to good full time work. That's what we need.
I'm going to open the phones now. Let's go to Boyd's, Maryland. And Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My concern isn't just part-time retail workers or people that, you know, have to take those jobs. I'm a registered nurse, and it has been common practice in hospitals for the 37 years I've been one that you sign up for 12 hours, and at 5:30 in the morning, they'll call you and cancel. And so you don't get work that day. And if you have vacation time, you have to take it if you want to get paid. Now, this occurred to me 8 times in a month at a hospital. So it isn't just people that work part-time. It is very common practice in hospitals all over the country.
All right. Susan, do you want to comment?
Yes, I just would like to say that according to these new national data, that's absolutely, you know, correct, of course, that these kinds of employer practices are widespread across industries. They affect full-time workers and part-time workers, men as well as women. These are common practices today.
And Cindy in Fort Worth, Texas writes, my son was a part-time worker at Starbucks going to college. His schedule was never the same. He would close at 2 a.m. and be scheduled to open at 4:30 a.m. the same day. He had no choice if he wanted to keep his job. Complaints to management were ignored. Aparna.
I would say, you know, if you're in a job where you think you're not getting the shift that you want, or if you think the employer is being unfair, there are multiple employers offering multiple shifts, multiple kind of flexible options. You know, as an employee, you have the right and the ability to move across employers.
Sure, you can quit.
You can quit.
But then finding another job may not be so easy. So that's why Cindy is
right.
saying her son has no choice.
Right.
And what the rules proposed are trying to change is exactly that kind of situation.
What I think we need to question is why are, you know, employers engaging in these practices? If we think that it's coming out of, you know, lack of concern for the employee, then, you know, we need to that's a different issue than saying employers are responding to economic conditions. They're facing changes in demand, which is affecting shift workers, and that's why they need to, that's why they're making these unpredictable, flexible work schedules. So to the extent it's coming out of an economic condition that employers are themselves facing, that they're facing huge costs, where they're facing fluctuations in demand that they can't control, I think we need to be a little bit sympathetic to the employer side of the equation as well.
Susan?
I'd say there's different ways to that end. There's a way to keep labor flexible while also delivering greater stability to employees. A lot of employers today are pretty darn good at predicting within, you know, 80 or 90% of their labor demands, and they need a little tweaking on the last 10 or 20%. But what we see are whole labor forces that are kept on call, treated as though they're contract workers and not regular employees. So it's a matter of degree. And the other thing is that flexibility is so important to business. Then businesses should pay for that, and not individual workers and not so much families or taxpayers, who a lot of this cost is externalized to the taxpayer, because then we have to provide supplements to the income for their workers.
All right. To Zeke in Freeport, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Listened to your show a number of times. I've enjoyed it. I'm frankly shocked to be able to get on the air, but Natalie put me through. I appreciate that. Several comments. I just want to say that, first of all, thank you for having the Congresswoman on. She clearly cares about this issue and is going to try to do something about it, but I'm pretty cynical. She's got no chance. She'll never get through a Republican Congress. And as to your two guests, the other woman that I believe Carrie seems caring as well, but I would direct my questions and comments to Aparna, I believe is her name. You cite a number of studies and surveys which are either totally inaccurate or, frankly, they use the word disingenuous. There are so many workers fighting for so many unavailable jobs. It's unbelievable. You have no concept how bad it is. Now, I would ask you this question. Companies have record profits right now. What is the problem? You say there's too much regulation with workers' hours. They're not hiring now with no regulations. What makes you think that more regulations to be fair to the worker is going to affect sales?
Okay, let me start with, you know, why do we see a growth in part-time employment during recessions? If in 2007, before the recession began, about 17% of the workforce was part-time employed. In 2010, about 20% is. We see, if you look at research coming out of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, and these are all highly cited, you know, good publications. I'm not citing random, places. They studied this issue of part-time employment, and what they find is that part-time employment is highly correlated with recessions. I mean, cyclical changes in demand predict very accurately what happens to part-time employment. Business slack is the biggest reason why we're seeing a big increase in part-time employment. And I'm completely sympathetic to the fact that there are, you know, 10 million people who are unemployed. There are 7.5 million who are in involuntary part-time jobs. They want full-time jobs. They're not getting them. But my argument is that if you now try to step in and say, okay, now we're going to step in between the employer and the employee, and we're also going to mandate how the employee negotiates with the employer, you're not going to get an outcome where the employer is now suddenly more willing to hire these workers, suddenly willing to give them, you know, better shifts and a better schedule. What you might get is a shift away from these workers, is a shift away from, you know, people to machines.
Let's hear what Susan has to say.
Well, I think we have to look at, you know, why employers are doing this and to separate out what is a rationale versus what is rational. And I think a lot of times we look at what businesses do and assume that people are really rational and that there's a business reason driving this. And when you're on the front lines of firms and you're studying these practices, anything but the word rational comes into your head. People are set home in the middle of a, you know, in the middle of a shift. It has to kind of undermine the overall profitability of business. And I think it's, again, a matter of degree. Businesses need some flexibility. Do they need as much as they have now? The kinds of things that are in being suggested in legislation are very minimal. They provide minimal standards around that employers should be able to work around and still maintain enough flexibility.
All right, let's go to Lynn in Charlotte, North Carolina. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a very long-time listener. I had to laugh. I tuned into your show, as I do whenever I can, because I was on my way home after showing up at my extremely part-time minimum wage job, showing up when I was scheduled to work, and being told, oh, so sorry, we changed the schedule. And I'm like, what? Because the way our job works, I'm in retail, is that they publish the schedule on Thursday or Friday. You check it, and then you show up to work. So I checked my schedule on Friday. I was scheduled today to work. And what happened was that they changed the schedule on Monday. No one bothered to tell me. I rearranged my entire week so that I could show up today, got in to work, and was told, oh, I'm so sorry, you're not supposed to be working today.
And were you paid any amount for the show?
No. Oh, no. My goodness, no.
So, Carrie, this is precisely the kind of situation you and a congresswoman are talking about.
Yeah, and I've worked with retail workers for almost a decade now, and the story that we just heard from that caller happens all the time. Employers change the schedule and aren't even legally required to notify workers that the schedule has changed. It's turning this workforce into a day-labored workforce, and that's why we need these protections.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Aparna, having heard the story from Lynn in Charlotte, North Carolina, what would you say to her?
I'm absolutely sympathetic to her story. What I would suggest is, you know, she needs to have a conversation with the employer. I'm not against a flexible, predictable, stable schedule. I would say negotiate it directly with the employer.
Okay. Lynn, what do you think about that? Negotiate with your employer.
I wouldn't negotiate if I had been bothered to be told. You know, when you're not told, and then you do what you follow the rules, and then you do what you're supposed to do, and they're like, oh, too bad, so sad. You know, I'm in a fortunate situation in that I do not use this job whatsoever to pay my rent, to pay child care. This is an extremely part-time job for me. However, I work with single mothers, I work with students, and I speak to them, and they are trying to pay rent, they are trying to buy groceries, they are trying to arrange child care around their work. And I'm one of the lucky ones. I don't have to arrange all those things. But I do know that this happens in my field.
All right. And Carrie.
I would just like to add that fundamental to these practices, what is happening across the board with unpredictable, unstable part-time work is that it's undermined the bargaining power that workers today have. It's completely destabilized employment in sectors like retail, which are now close to 10% of our private sector workforce. And what's happening is that it's labor market failure. It's not working. Workers don't have the power to be able to bargain over their schedules. Their hours just get cut when they speak up. And now, so that's why we're coming together
more broadly. Proposals about part-time, regulating part-time work schedules are, in fact, spreading. New York City is one. Talk about what's going on there.
What's happening in New York City is very exciting. There is a movement where workers in an organization called the Retail Action Project, a part of the Retail Workers Union, have been organizing for just hours at employers like Zara and have been taking on employers who are making the wrong choice and say, you know, we need you to change. And so they are coming together and exercising their right to organize. What's also happening is that you have Comptroller Scott Stringer and other progressive city council members that are exploring opportunities to pass new protections. They're exploring right to request as well as caregiver protections.
All right, Dan, we'll leave it right there. We'll be watching how things go. Carrie Gleason, she's director of the Fair Work Week Initiative. Aparna Amatur is at the American Enterprise Institute. Susan Lambert is at the School of Social Service at the University of Chicago. Thank you all so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane.
And thanks all for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkert, Denise Couture, Susan Casey, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Danielle Knight, Allison Brody, and Alexandra Boti. The engineer is Timothy Olmsted. Natalie Urblifker answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. And we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington, D.C. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from America's Natural Gas.